This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, and for Cynthia Canty. Cynthia recently sat down with a longtime Michigan musician who has just returned home after performing for millions on a nationally broadcast singing contest show. Well, let's just let Cindy explain.
It was the night the rest of America discovered what audiences here in Michigan have known for years.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane.
What's your name, man?
My name is Leif Alsadi. I'm 38, and I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And that blind audition on NBC's The Voice had stars Blake Shelton and Adam Levine raving about Leif's voice.
Dude, you're just such a great singer.
Thank you so much.
First of all, the control of your big voice, you have just as much control up high as you do down low. You're awesome. And
Thank you.
You shred like a maniac, and I love that.
And as a member of Team Adam, Leif Alsadi went on to finish fourth, back from The Voice and with us here at Michigan Radio. Leif, it is a pleasure to welcome you to Stateside.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Congratulations. You know, and I think about this, you've had 20-something years performing. You got your degree from U of M in?
Jazz studies and guitar and bass.
And you have been literally one of Michigan's hardest working musicians. Why did you decide to audition for The Voice?
Wow. You know, people had always suggested that I should do it, and I guess I always thought it would potentially be good, but I wasn't willing to, like, wait around a building for days. And I said, you know, well, if they ever come to me or if they send me an email, then maybe I'll do it. And that happened. They actually sent me an email, and I got a VIP audition with a time and stuff, and so I didn't have to cancel gigs to do it. And I was like, you know, this worked out really well for Josh Davis. It worked out really well for Michelle Shamwell, who, you know, we've had good Michigan representation on the show. And I got to say, first of all, I don't believe in music as a competition in general, and I also just think it's a strange platform to begin with, to be on essentially a game show for it. But I think The Voice is actually the best out of them in terms of they represent people well. They actually are really going for more talented people and generally better singers, and it's a good pool of people. And I think Josh Davis proved to me that you could maintain your integrity as an artist and be on the show, and I feel like I didn't really have to bend too much. I mean, I think maybe I was difficult for them to deal with this season, and people say I broke the mold, whatever. I was able to pretty much stay true to myself.
Yes, and there you are representing Michigan, as you say right there. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. As you walked out there and started singing on that blind audition night, did you in your heart expect chairs to turn around, or did you not care? Did you just say, here I am? What was going on in your mind?
Well, I was hoping that chairs would turn, and I guess I got pretty far into the song, and they hadn't. And so I went from really just thinking I'm going to do the best I can to, like, my heart was sinking a little bit because I'm like, you know, I feel like I'm doing pretty good on this, and they're not turning around. And there was this moment where I literally was thinking, while I'm singing this song, I have to, like, really just make this the best I can, because either way, this is going to be my biggest exposure on network television that I've ever had, even if I'm going home. And fortunately, I just decided to push through and give, you know, the performance my all. And after the fact, of course, you see that Adam and Blake were kind of looking at each other, seeing who was going to hit first and stuff, and it seems like more deliberate that they were going to. But God, I mean, you know, I didn't see what was going on. So my heart did kind of sink halfway through the bridge when I'm just like, yeah, they're not going to turn around, and I still have to make this a good performance.
But they did turn, and you wound up working with Adam. Why'd you pick him?
I think Adam had the most experience with rock and roll and just generally with the music that I have gravitated towards. And that's not to say that I think he's rock and roll. I mean, Maroon 5 is definitely more of a pop thing, but I think he listens to a lot of the music that I listen to. And I think that, you know, he's definitely a big Beatles fan. He's definitely a big blues fan. He likes Sinatra. He likes all this stuff. He's a very diverse guy. And I think, you know, he gets a lot of where I was coming from. That said, I'm kind of an Americana guy, and I think the blues is a big part of country, and it wasn't like I thought Blake would have been a bad choice, but I think Adam's a better guitar player. Adam had a little more concept of where I was coming from, and I do think I would have potentially had the guitar taken away from me by the other coaches. You know, maybe not Pharrell if he had picked me, but okay. I had to choose between Adam and Blake. So.
Well, and there you are doing it on the moment after the chair is turned, but you probably have thought it through in your mind if the chairs, turn around. Here's what I think.
Yeah,
I
really thought I was going to do Adam. I mean, you know, and I'm not going to lie. There were issues also about, you know, me being an Arab American and wondering how the Middle America country contingent was going to receive Laith Al-Saadi versus Adam and, you know, the Rock and Rollers, which might be a little more receptive. And, you know, it does have an impact because there's, you know, even still a certain percentage of people that are going to make terrorist jokes and things like that on YouTube or things like that under my name. And it's like, you know, I didn't really necessarily want to expose myself to more of that.
And how did it go ultimately through the process?
Really good. Really good.
Good to
mean,
hear.
Honestly, like, I was expecting a lot more hate because, of course, you know, with adoration is going to come that. And it's like, you know, people think things that you don't even put out there. Like, people claim that I was using the show as an opportunity to sell my own records. Like, I never brought up my own music. Pharrell bringing up my music on that show was totally unexpected to me. It was totally unprecedented. It was awesome. I mean, it was a great push, but, like, I actually never still brought up my own music. It wasn't ever manipulated by me as a platform to do anything but be a contestant on it. And I feel very lucky that they embraced that and that they asked me questions about it and chose to give some attention. But, I mean, you know, but, like, we have so much footage that is taped, you know, that they're not picking from. So what's seen is, like, you know, what, 1/30th of what they have, maybe, you know, in terms of interviews and stuff like that. And it's obviously heavily edited and stuff. So I think anything that was represented on the show is very calculated and thought about.
I have to contrast your experience, Laith Al-Saadi, with so many of the other people who've been on The Voice who are new to the business, but you certainly are not. 20 years, hundreds of gigs every year. What did you think you brought to The Voice?
Well, I like to think that I brought music that is underrepresented today, that is, I think, some of the greatest music ever made to that show. And that goes for blues, and it also goes for the classic rock of the British invasion and the Vietnam and civil rights era. I mean, for me, the period of 1965 through 1975, or let's go 64 through 74 or whatever, is probably my favorite period in the 20th century in terms of output. And there's so many reasons why. I mean, you know, I think that there was a belief that music could change the world. I think that there was a social consciousness that existed, that people were really fighting against stuff where they could see that they were making a change directly. And I mean, it was like, you know, whether it was civil rights, whether it was women's rights, whether it was Vietnam, all these things were fueling the fire of art. I just think between Motown and jazz and rock and roll and the British invasion and all that stuff, that was the time. And so I did Joe Cocker, I did the Beatles, I did Albert King and B.B. King, and I don't consider myself the savior of the blues or anything like that, which is another thing people like try to get on my case on these comments, and I hate to respond to them, but it's like, I was proud to play music that I love on that stage. I don't see myself as anything more than a vessel for stuff that I like to represent that. So if I can give more exposure to stuff that is underrepresented in today's time and culture, that makes me happy. And so I guess, in short, that's what I think I brought to the show. I think I brought music that was really important to me and who I am as a person, and was able to authentically represent myself through other people's stuff. Because, as you know, I'm a singer-songwriter, so I had to use covers and the music that had influenced me that I thought was still going to resonate with people. And to see that actually work was like so gratifying. To play B.B. King and be near the top of the iTunes charts with that in a pop and country world was a wonderful thing. It was really invigorating to see that there is kind of, I mean, there's a thirst. I brought a new demographic to the show, and even the producers told me that, and I could see that glimmer of pride in their eyes because they're 50, 60 years old. I mean, I think that they don't listen to most of the music that is represented on that show, and I think that actually I made them a little bit proud. I mean, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but I mean, I could see that and
you
hear
felt
it.
That. Their,
yeah, I totally.
Well, let's flip this around. What did being on the show do for you? What did you learn that maybe you didn't know before?
Wow, it was a big experience in terms of personal growth for me, and of course, I am not somebody that thinks about the things that one that's a TV personality thinks about, you know. And it was weird to adjust to glam squads and people dressing me up and, you know, such high budget production and stuff like that. I mean, it was awesome to experience. The lighting and all the staging and all that stuff was just amazing. The production of the show was amazing to be a part of.
It certainly opened your mind to that type of thing.
Yeah,
you don't get on a small stage in Michigan.
TV's such a strange world.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, even the whole, like, I normally have time before I get on a stage to have myself get composed and think clearly, and it's like they have cameras on you at all times and they want to capture nerves, and they'll actually make you pace back and forth and act like you're nervous getting ready for stuff. And it's like that may be all fake, but still that's the moment before you're getting on stage, and figuratively or whatever you want to say, it's the largest stage I've ever played on. It is not physically, but still the idea that you're being seen by 15, 16 million people when you step on there is crazy. That's more put together in one shot than my entire performing career before that. And I had played for big crowds. I was a Lions pep band singer at packed Ford Field on occasion up on the Jumbotron and stuff. Like, I'm not totally a stranger to a little bit of this like local level celebrity thing, but I mean, that was national. That was, you know, really crazy to think that maybe, you know, 1/20th of this country actually knows who I am statistically.
When you look at your time through The Voice, is there a song or one moment from the show that really hit it home for you that you will always cherish?
I think actually I had a lot of those moments. One of my favorites was in the finale doing the end of Abbey Road with Adam. And the reason why I play music is because of the Beatles. And that was such a poetically just way for me to leave that journey, because it was hard. I actually wanted to play Beatles much earlier, and I think that they're not the easiest to license, and I think it was kind of a big deal, and they wanted to wait till the end. And I actually had plans to do something different. What I was hoping for was to do Let It Be by myself, and then I was going to try and have Adam and I do a Sinatra song, because I actually really wanted to sing a jazz song still. The more I thought about it, people had kind of invested and voted in this rock blues version of Laith that I thought I didn't want to do something polarizing like that. And so I thought if I were to do jazz, it would be good to have it on a song that wasn't voted on, that was just kind of fun. And I thought the coaches thing could be good for that. Well, Adam didn't want to do that, and he thought up this whole let's do the end of Abbey Road, because we had talked about it and both agreed that that was probably our favorite piece of recorded music in the history of recorded music. That's just a beautiful way to go out. I felt so privileged to play, again, that piece of music with an orchestra on stage, you know, and I mean, really pull it off relatively authentically with that. The whole finale experience for me, I think, was great, because I was resigned to not win. I didn't really think that I would make it as far as I did. And I think, especially because I had to do the instant save, I really felt like, okay, I'm probably not going to be in the top two in this group, but that's not really what I wanted. When I even came into it, and I know that it probably would be more beneficial to win the show and have the record contract and all that stuff, but I'm so used to running my own ship, to be honest, I didn't necessarily want to be controlled after this, and this was kind of me trying to get the most exposure that I could. So for me, finishing third or fourth was like the ideal outcome, because I'd still get to have control over my life, but I got to be in every episode up until the end of that. I got as many tracks on iTunes. I got as many people to see my stuff. And long story short, again, the finale was me kind of going out in my little blaze of rock and roll glory. I mean, I got to play Cream. I got to play the Beatles. I got to play with Joe Walsh. I mean, I got to play Georgia On My Mind. I got to play one of my favorite originals and get more eyes on my original music. And so, I mean, I just felt like I had won. I feel like actually that was probably the best outcome for me.
Just based on what I was reading on social media and the like, I think a lot of your fans were feeling the same thing. Like, yeah, we want them to win, but we really don't, because we want Laith to be Laith.
And it preserves some kind of chance of that. I mean, of course, I might not be playing for free at the local bar anymore, because I'm hoping to kind of elevate my status as an artist to being able to play more of my own music to people that want to listen instead of get drunk and talk over me. I mean, I still intend on playing a whole lot, but I want to get around the country. I want to get around the world. I want to be able to record records the way that I want to. I mean, ultimately, that's the legacy I get to leave. And it's like, you know, I mean, my last album, Real, I really did the way that I wanted to in terms of getting my favorite session players on the West Coast and using a top-notch studio. And it's great. The recording quality is great. The feeling of it is much better than a local project. But I mean, it's like, you know, I need to be able to make records of the quality that I'm capable of as an artist without being limited by financial constraints, I guess.
So the show is hopefully your stepping stone to do that.
I hope so. And of course, it hasn't been yet, but I really feel like it will be. I feel like, you know, even the support I'm getting already for my upcoming shows is great. You know, I have a homecoming show coming up at the Michigan Theater in Ann Arbor.
And Friday, July 8th.
Totally excited about that. Yeah. And that's another thing about homecomings is Michigan Theater in Ann Arbor was the place where I had my first professional gig ever doing theater. I was in Leonard Bernstein's Mass in 1985 there. And then I did 1986. I did a thing of Peter Pan there. And then I graduated from high school for Community on that stage. And I opened up for B.B. King on that stage. And for me to be headlining that theater for the first time in my life is just a huge, huge deal. I mean, it's a wonderful place. And it's, for me, it's got so many memories. And so this was a big, big homecoming for me.
Well, as you kind of take all of what's just happened with you on The Voice and see where that takes you, I'm getting the sense that you're such a homegrown Ann Arborite, that if you can make this happen being based in Ann Arbor, you want to do that.
I really do. And I think it's because I want to travel. And I think the more that I am going to be an international or national artist, the less it matters where I base myself out of, because that's my downtime. Before, it was a matter of making sure I made connections. And to be honest, I've put a lot of efforts into going to cities that I want to have a presence in. So I've gotten to spend a lot of time in New Orleans and L.A. I mean, I've been going to California at least 5 or 6 times a year for the last 5 years, 6 years. So basically, I felt like I would have to make myself known. I'd have to go out and get connected. And I made great connections with people in L.A. Jimmy Vivino at Conan O'Brien's a big friend of mine, and he comes to Michigan to play with me every year, but I get to play with him out there. And I made good connections before The Voice out there with the Southern California Blues Society and with different groups out there that would give me gigs. So I've always been kind of trying to spread my wings from here, but I've never really toured. This whole television thing is crazy, because now I've been exposed in places of the country that I've never even set foot in, and I might be able to go and play a theater in a place that I've never been to and have people interested in coming out to see me, and that's just crazy.
But if you just stop and you think of one Marshall Mathers and one Bob Ritchie, being Eminem and Kid Rock, who have totally made it happen.
Yep.
So
it's
doable.
And Bob Seger. And I mean, we've always had people that have. And the thing is, I think also Detroit has a reputation, and it's like people know. Some of the greatest musicians in the world have come from Detroit. People having to move to L.A. or New York or Nashville kind of homogenizes who they are. And I think there are regional sounds that exist in this country. And I even feel like very much in the music that I play, while it's obviously influenced by music from all over the world, it is definitely heavily influenced by music of the Midwest. Like, my approach to the blues is much closer to Detroit and Chicago blues than it would be Mississippi Delta type stuff. And it's because I listen to Muddy Waters and Buddy Guy and Willie Dixon and John Lee Hooker and Albert King and all these people that were from the Midwest. And so, you know, regional sounds are a huge part of who we are. I mean, I have a big Motown influence on my stuff. I have a big funk influence. You know, I mean, Parliament and Funkadelic, George Clinton is all Detroit music.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have so much good stuff. I mean, the auto industry and what we had here in terms of the industrial boom brought people from the South. It brought people from all over the country. We were just such a cool melting pot culturally, and I think Detroit is something that's unique. I think Detroit needs to be represented. It's a scene I'm proud to be part of, and I hope y'all are proud to have me as part of it.
Well, a good start would be your show coming up, as we were saying, Friday, July 8th at the Michigan Theater. Really a homecoming for you, Laith. It's wonderful. And I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. And I hope this is not the last of our visits on Stateside. We'd love to see you back.
Well, thank you. I'd love to be back.
Laith El-Saadi, thank you so much for being with us. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.